Good afternoon, and welcome to the PPG First Quarter 2016 Earnings Conference Call. My name is Andrew, and I will be your conference specialist today. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Scott Minder, Director, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon. This is Scott Minder, Director of Investor Relations. We appreciate your interest in PPG Industries and welcome you to this teleconference to review PPG's First Quarter 2016 financial results. Joining me on the call from PPG are Michael McGarry, President and Chief Executive Officer, Frank Sklarsky, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and Vince Morales, Vice President, Investor Relations and Treasurer. Our comments relate to the financial information released on Thursday, April 21st, 2016. I will remind everyone that we posted detailed commentary and accompanying presentation slides on the investor center of our website, ppg.com. The slides are also available on the webcast site for this call and provide additional support to the opening comments Michael will make momentarily. Following Michael's perspective on the company results for the quarter, we will move to a Q&A session. Both the prepared commentary and the discussion during this call may contain forward-looking statements reflecting the company's current view of future events and their potential effect on PPG's operating and financial performance. These statements involve uncertainties and risks, which may cause actual results to differ. The company is under no obligation to provide subsequent updates to these forward-looking statements. This presentation also contains certain non-GAAP financial measures. The company has provided in the appendix of the presentation materials, which are available on our website, reconciliations of these non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable GAAP financial measures. For additional information, please refer to PPG's filings with the SEC. Now, let me introduce PPG President, Chief Executive Officer, Michael McGarry.
Thank you, Scott, and good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank you for your continued interest in PPG. Today, we reported first quarter 2016 financial results. We achieved first quarter net sales of $3.7 billion and record adjusted earnings per diluted share of $1.31. Overall, we continue to deliver strong financial results as evidenced by our adjusted earnings per diluted share growth in the quarter, which increased 11% versus the record established in the prior year. We achieved these results despite ongoing unfavorable foreign currency translation and continued uneven global economic and market conditions. Several factors contributed to the record first quarter results, including earnings leverage on our organic sales volume growth, our continued heritage of cost management, and acquisition-related sales and income. Additionally, we continue to utilize our strong balance sheet to deliver shareholder value, including first quarter 2016 share repurchases totaling $150 million. For the quarter, our average diluted shares outstanding declined by 2% year-over-year. Our strong quarterly results were aided by our own operational and strategic actions, including aggressive efforts to drive higher organic growth despite a mixed economic environment. We continue to accelerate our work on developing and commercializing new customer-driven technologies. This includes packaging coatings' ongoing customer adoption of our new can coating technologies, along with certain key technology adoptions in our protective coatings business. In addition, we are continuing the rollout of our enhanced customer branding initiatives. As you would expect from PPG, we continue to maintain our discipline over costs, including finalizing the remaining actions from our previously announced business restructuring program. Now I will discuss some specific business trends for the first quarter. Our net sales in local currencies increased about 4%, while reported net sales were consistent with the prior year. Local currency net sales growth was driven by acquisition-related sales of about 3% and sales volume growth of 1%. These gains were offset by unfavorable foreign currency translation of 4%, or about $140 million in the first quarter. Our first quarter sales volumes increased 1%, consistent with the prior year's growth rate, reflecting a continuation of modest global economic trends led by broadening European demand growth. Sales volumes grew in emerging regions by 1%. Continued growth in Asia Pacific, including China, was partially offset by persistent market weakness in South America. Most of our business units experienced higher sales volumes in Asia, led by increased market demand for PPG's new technologies in our packaging and automotive refinish coatings businesses, along with growth in protective coatings. Automotive OEM sales volumes in Asia were tempered primarily due to a strong prior year comparable period where PPG experienced above-market double-digit percentage volume increases. We expect second quarter emerging region sales volumes growth rates to improve, supported by increases in most businesses in Asia and modest overall improvements in Latin America. Volumes in the U.S. and Canada region were slightly higher versus prior year and represented sequential improvement compared to the prior two quarters. Regional demand trends continue to be mixed by business and country, with ongoing demand softness in certain markets within Canada. In the region, sales volumes grew in our packaging and automotive refinish coatings business, along with modest growth in our architectural coatings business. Aerospace sales volumes declined primarily due to lower commercial demand and continued customer inventory management actions. Looking ahead, we anticipate further incremental improvements in regional growth rates in the second quarter, building upon the month of March, which had the strongest sales volume growth within the quarter. Regionally, our highest first quarter sales volume growth rate was in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, which delivered over 3% growth. We continue to experience a broadening improvement in Europe demand with our fifth consecutive quarter improving growth rates. PPG's volume growth rates were positive across Western Europe, with most countries improving year over year. Despite overall growth this quarter, regional demand levels remain uneven. Improved performance in our architectural coatings EMEA business added to continued strong performance in our packaging and automotive OEM coatings business in the region, primarily due to continued customer adoption of PPG's market-leading technologies and related world-class product, service, and support. Architectural growth was led by gains in the UK and Benelux countries, with the year-over-year growth France. We remain optimistic for future economic-driven demand expansion in the EMEA region. Despite recent improvements, regional demand remains well below pre-recession levels, and we continue to see signs of ongoing modest improvements in various economic subsectors. During the past several years, we've completed significant actions to reduce our overall regional cost structure. Similar to our experience the past several quarters, we expect strong income leverage on any incremental sales volume growth. I would like to provide a quick update on foreign currency translation. As I mentioned earlier, during the quarter, unfavorable foreign currency translation lowered sales by approximately $140 million and pre-tax income by about $15 million. This was primarily related to the Mexican peso and the Canadian dollar, but included other currencies as well, such as the euro. Based on current exchange rates, we anticipate full-year unfavorable foreign currency translation to lower net sales by $200 to $260 million and income by $30 to $40 million. This is a decrease from the figures that we provided during our fourth quarter 2015 earnings call in January. This change reflects the strengthening of several foreign currencies versus the U.S. dollar during the first quarter. Shifting to earnings, year-over-year adjusted earnings per diluted share increased 11% to a new first quarter record of $1.31, including unfavorable foreign currency translation. This marks the 13th consecutive quarter of double-digit percentage earnings per diluted share growth and was achieved despite record performance in the first quarter of 2015. This trend of strong increases in quarterly earnings per diluted share is a reflection on the success of our business portfolio transformation actions taken over the past several years, including the successful integration and synergy achievement of several major acquisitions. For the quarter, Performance Coatings segment sales declined by 1% and segment income was up more than 6%. Contributing to the results were higher acquisition-related sales and income, primarily from L'Agence Française and Cummins Microwave, strong income leverage on higher sales volumes, and benefits from business restructuring, partly offset by unfavorable foreign currency translation. Segment income included approximately $15 million of incremental growth-related spending in Architecture U.S. and Canada. I'm pleased to report that we are currently launching several new products within many of our domestic national account partner store networks. These launches include new premium products at some national accounts, as well as improved product formulation and differentiated product labeling. Industrial coating segment sales were up 2%, and segment earnings increased 9%. Earnings leverage from organic sales volume growth, acquisition-related sales and income, along with disciplined cost management, were partially offset by unfavorable foreign currency translation. Acquisition-related growth was primarily from the Revercoat and IBC industrial businesses acquired in 2015. These businesses continue to deliver strong financial results. They provide an excellent platform for future global business growth. Glass segment sales declined 2% and earnings declined by 7% versus the prior year. Higher selling prices and cost management actions were offset by lower sales volumes, $8 million in repair-related expenses due to a planned facility outage, and lower equity earnings. Despite the lower sales volumes, underlying flat glass demand remained solid. Additional segment and regional details can be found in the presentation materials. Overall, our business performed well in the first quarter as we continue to manage against a mixed global economic backdrop. Continue to focus our efforts on improving organic growth rates through enhanced product innovation, customer branding strategies. Remain diligent over our costs and are on pace to achieve the previously announced savings from our ongoing business restructuring program. Finally, our balance sheet remains strong, and we are committed to deploying between $2 billion and $2.5 billion of cash in years 2015 and 2016 combined on acquisitions and share repurchases. In the first quarter, we repurchased $150 million of our stock, bringing the total to $900 million for the two-year period to date. Coupled with the approximately $400 million paid for acquisitions in 2015, PPG has deployed about $1.3 billion on earnings accretive actions against this target to date. We have a strong global pipeline of acquisition candidates across various end-use markets. In addition to share repurchases and acquisitions, PPG remains committed to sustainable dividend increases as part of our capital allocation strategy. Today, our board of directors approved a dividend increase of 4 cents per share, bringing the quarterly dividend to 40 cents per share. This represents an 11% increase versus the prior quarterly dividend. Our last quarterly dividend increase was 7% in the second quarter of 2015. As you can see by our actions and continued strong financial results, we remain focused on driving additional growth aimed at creating shareholder value. This concludes our prepared remarks. Once again, we appreciate your interest in PPG. And now, Andrew, would you please open the line for questions?
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one, on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. The first question comes from Frank Mitsch of Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Michael, I was intrigued by your comment about March being the best volume month of the three in Q1. Can you give us an idea as to where that was and what does that suggest for Q2 and beyond? Are we looking at PPG getting higher than a 1% of volume growth in 2016?
Well, Frank, let's start with the obvious question. We're certainly not happy with the 1% growth. But we are in the very early stages of our growth program. So the BPA NI for packaging coatings, we'll get questions on that, but that's progressing well. The OEM compact process continues to do well, refinish, waterborne. So I'd say that's the first commentary. The second one, which is March. March, we had a nice start to the paint season. Clearly, we're anticipating that this is going to be a better paint season than we had last year. So that was a manifestation of that. Also, you had the uneven and uncertain return from the Chinese New Year. People were worried about that. So we were, and we tried to tell you that we had a good order book coming into the Chinese New Year at our last call. We did see that coming out of Chinese New Year. So we did see good growth there. And I think the other one is the broadening of the growth rate in Europe. That was a nice win there as well. So all together, I would say that we were closer to 2 to 3% growth in March versus the 1% that we reported in the overall quarter.
Okay. All right. And as I look at slide 9, and the auto forecast. Now, obviously, we've been spoiled in expecting PPG to outpace the overall industry, and in Q1, I guess partly due to a difficult comp, the company matched the overall industry rather than exceeded the overall industry. But as I look at that chart, it looks like Q2 China, you're going to see a material ramp up in activity. Am I reading this correctly?
I think the way I would think about this, Frank, is, we've always said that we are not always going to outperform the industry. At some point, we would have some reversion to mean. If you remember last year, first quarter 2015, we were up 9%, and Asia was up much higher than that. So, when I look at our automotive performance, we had two regions that outperformed, one region that underperformed, and one region was at parity. So we were essentially at the 1.7% growth rate for the industry. So I would say, when I think back about the 4 years of consecutive outperformance, if our team took a one-quarter pause, not happy, but obviously, in the grand scheme of things, we are continuing to perform very well in the automotive business. And I would expect that we're going to continue to see growth. In Europe, registrations were up 5%, so I would expect European builds to continue. Asia builds, India's really doing well. I'm not going to call the bottom in Brazil because I don't know where that is. But certainly, I think overall, we're pleased with the performance.
All right, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
The next question comes from Ghansham Panjabi of Robert W. Baird. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. It's actually Mehul Dalia sitting in for Ghansham. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Can you talk about pricing in the auto OEM market globally? Are you seeing any price concessions given the decline in raws and the bargaining power of customers in that business? And then just more broadly, how should we think about pricing for the company as a whole in 2016?
Well, let's talk about pricing in general. At the end of the day, we have consistently been able to price in this environment. Last year, we had marginally positive price in an obviously very challenging environment. We have forecasted marginally, flat to marginally up again this year. The automotive segment, it's not really a fair thing to look at it on a piece-by-piece basis because most of what we have is new product technology, so it's hard to compare the new technology versus the old. So overall, we've have very sophisticated automotive customers. They expect fair pricing. We have new technology. We expect to be paid appropriately for our new technology, and I would say both parties are very happy with the the price and value and performance of the new products in the marketplace.
Thank you. And then for my next question, can you parse out growth in the various channels in North America paint during the quarter? So I guess company-owned stores, national accounts, independents, and Canada, and how kind of your performance compared to the market?
Just we were having a little difficulty hearing you. Let me repeat the question. I think you asked if we could parse out the different volume growth by U.S. architectural channel. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so U.S. architectural channel. So overall, we had the low to mid single digits in that channel. Depends by region. So obviously, the one that continues to go backwards is, and no surprise, is a dealer, independent dealer channel. That's an area where, you know, that is a shrinking environment. You have the small owners of hardware stores and paint shops over time losing share to the big boxes and to the company-owned stores. So no change in that environment. I don't want to comment per se on how our retail customers are doing. I think it's up to them to comment on how the retail customers are doing. What I will tell you is that we had new product launches with Diamond and the Glidden brand and Home Depot. The early signs, it's just now getting in the market. The early signs are very positive. We have a super premium price point. Paramount and Menards also off to a good start. Glidden Complete at Walmart. So, you know, I think when we look at it from our perspective, and I certainly have to let our customers talk about it from their perspective, but we're pleased with what we're seeing. The company-owned stores varies by region and varies, you know, whether it's U.S. and Canada. But clearly there's an opportunity for us to continue to deliver more growth going forward.
Great. And just one last one. Can you give some more details on the weakness in aerospace? Is it just small planes, large planes, or both? And kind of what gives you confidence on an improvement in 2Q?
Sure. So when you think about the aerospace business, you have to have several things to think about. So one of them is, you know, a year ago, customers were having significant launch programs, and as they ramped up, you know, the last thing they want to do is stop their line with lack of product. And so they had tended to over-inventory. Now they're more at a steady state rate, and so there allows them to have more confidence in their build rate and their usage rate. So that's a short-term hurdle. You do have some underlying softness, though. If you take the oil and gas market, they fly a lot of helicopters. So obviously they're flying less helicopters in this kind of environment, so you have less aftermarket sales and you have less new helicopter builds. So that would be one. And then general aviation, there's a lot of churn in the water, as you can tell, with one of our customers in Canada. So there's some things going on up there. So I think overall we're on a short-term, you know, one-quarter, two-quarter bump in the road, but I anticipate the second half of the year for aerospace to be much better. I would point out that the acquisitions that we made, the two aerospace acquisitions we made, are performing very well, and their growth rate is above the growth rate of the overall business. So the outlook, I would say, is solid.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Christopher Parkinson of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Can you just walk through a little more detail on what you're seeing in the Mexican market and Comex, and potentially just parse out architectural and stores versus industrial, energy, government spending, and just overall just what assumptions are going into your double Mexican GDP growth assumption? Thank you.
Sure. We'll start with first quarter last year. We were up 10%+ in Mexico, and this year we're up our sales were up 5% in Mexico. The GDP in Mexico is 2.2%. Our growth is being driven by several factors. The first one is the new store growth rate. Last year we added 170 stores in Mexico. We're over 4,000 stores. We're now, today as we speak, over 4,100 stores, and we will add another 170 stores there. So we've been gaining a lot of share in Mexico. You know, the Comex team, when we bought them, had a very large concentration of their market share in what I would call central Mexico. They were underrepresented in southern Mexico and underrepresented in northern Mexico. Plus, we have a U.S. retail partner that have stores in Mexico, so we recently introduced a store-in-store concept down there. That's allowing them to gain share as well. So from the store side, it's about service and product availability, and that's doing very well. Certainly, government spending has softened, and a lot of that is related to projects. The government is trying to reduce spending given the price of oil. But there are elections coming up, so I would tell you that we're going to wait and see how it plays out. But historically in Mexico, when they have elections, the local politicians try to spruce things up to make things look a little bit better. And obviously, if they do that, we will be very happy to participate as we have a very significant share in Mexico.
If I could add one item, Chris, this is Vince. You know, one of the synergies we'd earmarked when we did the acquisition was revenue synergies. That's what we added subsequent to the acquisition. And we are doing very well in our protective coating sales into Mexico, which was one of the synergies we targeted. So that is another adder to the growth rate.
That's very helpful. Thank you. And just a quick follow-up. You obviously already had a few shipments from Billions. Can you just give us a quick update on the agreement, ramp-up outlook, et cetera, going forward? And just generally, how do you feel about its prospects versus, let's say, maybe a year ago? Thank you.
Well, I would tell you that we have tripled our purchases from Billions in Q1 versus 4Q. But we're not satisfied with the build rate, if you will. We think they can deliver more. Obviously, they're successful in selling other places besides PPG. But overall, the product quality continues to get better. The consistency gets better. And we are using it. We recently started bringing it into other regions besides U.S. And Central America and Latin America. So, you know, the usage broadens. Obviously, we started in Asia. But I would tell you, overall, we've been pleased, but we've certainly challenged the Hennen Billions Group to continue to work harder to bring the production rate up to a higher level.
Their production rate has ramped significantly over the last 6 months. They're running very good yields, and they just need to ramp up their pace a bit more.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from David Begleiter of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Mike, how do you expect the recent rise in oil prices to impact PPG, and when will it begin to impact PPG?
Well, David, I would first start by saying that, as you know, we always tell you that we pull raw materials 6 to 9 months. It takes us 6 to 9 months to pull it through. So we're still pulling through the lower prices that we saw in 3Q, 4Q. So that's a, you know, if you're looking for that positive. The second thing is, you know, oil bounced, you know, if you think about where it started Q1 and where it finished Q1, you know, it kind of bounced down, came back a little bit. But I'd say overall it's too early to see where that's going. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market, obviously. We're not oil traders, but you can read the same things we read as far as oil. So we're not displeased with where we are in pulling through the raw material savings.
And Mike, overall, do you think your margins are near peak, or can they go higher with operating leverage offsetting maybe a little bit of cost inflation here?
Yeah, we're certainly not at peak. Don't forget, you know, we still have the savings. For Europe, we said for the full year, I think it was $70 million that we were going to pull through in Europe. So that's one. Two, you have significant earnings leverage when we get volume recovery in Europe. Obviously, you saw the margins expansion in this quarter. That was driven by several things, the leverage from Europe, restructuring savings, acquisition synergies, you know, some modest raw material benefits. But overall, I still think we can do better, and certainly our team thinks we can do better.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
The next question comes from Robert Cort of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Michael, how do you discern at the aerospace customers inventory adjustments versus demand adjustments?
Well, one thing we do is we have a significant insight because of our share with some of these customers. So we are able to, I don't want to call it vendor managed inventory, but we have significant insight into what they're stocking. The growth rate for the large, you know, if you think Boeing and Airbus, that obviously they have big backlogs, but their build rate is flat to marginally down. And that is obviously, you know, when you think about their inability to get production rates up, it, you know, it's frustrating for us. I can't imagine how frustrating it must be internally for them. But that's the two ways we look at that, Bob.
And can you talk about variation in price across the portfolio? I assume there are puts and takes, but are there any particular areas outside of non-BPA, BPA and I, where there's been some price improvement?
It's Bob, we have pluses and minuses, as you noted, throughout the portfolio, but there's no outliers on either side.
And last one, very quickly, can we assume the same target level of acquisitions in 2016 that you completed last year? Thanks.
I think that's a reasonable expectation. As we've always said, it's impossible to predict large ones. We have a pipeline that looks very similar to the pipeline we had last year. We had seven deals that had about $400 million in sales. I would expect to see a similar level of activity this year, and I think you'll have, you'll see that as we go through the year. Bob?
Andrew?
All set. Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you. Thanks.
Thanks. The next question comes from Jeff Zekauskas of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Jeff.
Hi. What are the net cash outflows from asbestos this year, and do you still think you'll settle your asbestos liabilities?
Yeah, this is Frank. Jeff, we do expect we're going to settle up in the first half of the year, before the end of the first half of the year. And consistent with what we've said in the past and what you'll see when we file our Q or where we lay that out, we've got about $500 million of cash going out initially, plus the option to pay out an additional amount of cash, which represents the present value of the future obligations discounted at 5.5%. We'll obviously evaluate economic conditions at that time to determine whether we take advantage of that discount that could potentially be attractive for us to do so. So the gross being something over $800 million, but then almost immediately we will start on a quarterly basis, be adjusting our estimated taxes, and we'll, over the ensuing few quarters, achieve a benefit that will bring the net cash outflow in total to about $500 million. That would assume, if you were to assume that we took advantage of the discounted annuity. So that would be the way we would look at it. And, of course, we also have the donating of the PPG stock to the trust in addition to that.
And, Jeff, we have that stock hedged at about $22.
Right.
So if you do the math, it's about 2.8 million shares. So you're looking at somewhere in the $50 million range. That stock's in our share count already. It will remain in our share count going forward.
But that $50 million is included in the amounts that I
right.
gave you.
Okay, great. And for my follow-up, your gross margin last year expanded 110 basis points, and this quarter it expanded 160, even though you had no sales growth. But last year your currency effects were -7 each quarter, and this quarter maybe it was a little less than -4. Is there a link between the smaller currency pressure and the widening of the gross margin, or are they not linked? And if they're not linked, why did your gross margin qualitatively advance versus what you were achieving last year?
Yeah, it's a good observation. Despite the fact that we still, even though the currency headwind was a little bit lower than we expected, it was still a headwind in Q1 versus prior. I think there's a combination of factors. One, we did get some benefit, additional benefit this year from restructuring that would not have taken place in last year's first quarter because the restructuring program was really just getting underway at that point in the first half of the year. So there's that piece of it. We had some manufacturing productivity. We've moved more aggressively, obviously, particularly in Europe, on rationalizing and moving things into a shared service environment from the administrative side. Acquisitions with a nice pass-through of the margins from those acquisitions was also an uplift, as those acquisitions provided us a margin a little bit above the corporate average. So the combination of factors, plus, admittedly, as we had said before, a modest amount of raw material savings in the first half of this year, continuing what we saw in the back half of last year, all that contributed to the 110 basis points. 160 basis points, year over year.
Right, but did the change, the smaller currency headwind, benefit your gross margin?
I would say on a relative basis, well, it was still a headwind. And so from an absolute standpoint, I guess the answer would be no. And even when you go back to last year's first quarter, that the headwind wasn't materially different than it was in this year's first quarter, even though this year's first quarter was a little less than we might have expected.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
The next question comes from Duffy Fisher of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, fellas.
Duffy.
Question just around Europe. Seeing some recovery there, could you kind of tease out where you're seeing that recovery? And then in architectural in Europe, are you growing with the market or faster than the market over there?
Well, let's take it by country, Duffy, just to add a little more color to it. So starting with the UK, Ireland, it is growing faster than the company average and taking share, clearly. Then you take France, growing lower than the company average, but taking share. Then you take Central Europe, I would say slightly below the company average, maintaining share. Okay, that's kind of the architectural landscape, if you will. But then when you get into our other businesses, you know, we have a broadening recovery. So Southern Europe, Spain, Italy, for example, significantly accelerating growth quarter over quarter in all our businesses, and that's a benefit. We don't have architectural. We do have a little bit in Spain, but very little. We have a little bit in Italy, but grand scheme of things, pretty small. So overall, Spain and Southern Italy and Southern Europe is doing very well, and that's a net positive force. You know, the offset to that, of course, is Russia. Although I will tell you that we are outperforming in Russia, especially in our industrial business. They've done a really good job there. They're trying to get more localization, and so that has benefited us. The Middle East, I would say, slightly better than company average, and that encompasses all our business. And I'd say our protective business is probably one of the ones that are, you know, doing pretty well in the Middle East.
Great. And then
there'll be a slide in our presentation deck that shows the region. It's a heat map that shows the region by country year over year.
Okay, fair enough. And then just on BPA, you've been taking some nice market share there. How long should we think about that trend lasting? Is that something that's got another, you know, 4 or 5 quarters, or might it have another 8 to 10 quarters?
Well, I would look at it just like I look at automotive. You know, we had 4 years of automotive outperformance. This is technology that we're leading in. You know, there's been 2 plants converted in France. We have the vast majority of that business now with the Proposition 65 in California. There have been 6 plants converted in the U.S., and I would call our share at 5-plus out of those 6. So, and so you still have the whole wave of the rest of the U.S. to come. The food guys just started to convert probably the third quarter of last year, so you still have that coming on. So I think net-net, this is a long-term structural gain. I mean, we used to have only 3% share inside the can. You would think over time we would approach, you know, 25 or 30% share, you know, at a minimum. I certainly have challenged the team to be better than that. But I would tell you, this is a secular change. These guys take for, you know, they don't change for 30 years, and then when they do change, it happens over time, and we'll should expect to see this ramp up over the next several years.
Great. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Vincent Andrews of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Wanted to revisit the M&A conversation, and I guess my thought is that, you know, there obviously was a large transaction announced between two of your larger peers, and the byproduct of that is that they're no longer competing with you for any M&A asset that might be out there. So I'm just wondering if the dialogue between yourself and those on that target list of yours is accelerating or changing in any way, and has there been any impact on the discussions from the transaction multiple that was recently put up on the board?
Well, I think you have to evaluate these independently. The transaction multiple that was announced in the first quarter was a unique property and came with a unique price, and we certainly, if anybody tries to argue for that price for PPG to pay, that will be a very short discussion. So we'll start there. The second thing I would say is, you know, perhaps they could be out of the market for some period of time, but you know what? They have cash. Debt is easy to get, and we're not going to assume that this is an open runway for us. We're going to look at what our competition is. We have multiple people that are competing with these properties, so we will continue to evaluate that. But the bottom line is we have not seen any increase in the number of people coming to us. I would tell you that overall our mantra remains the same, that we are very disciplined buyers, and that business teams have to make a justification and the synergies have to be there. And that's the focus anytime we look at any acquisition.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Don Carson of Susquehanna Financial. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Just a question on your architectural growth in the U.S. and Canada. So you talked about low to mid-single-digit growth. Do you think you're underperforming the market there? How would you characterize your overall market growth? And what kind of a sort of snapback do you see this quarter and into third quarter based on the weather?
Hey, Don, this is Vince. A little bit of an early read in the paint season, and we don't have enough data points yet to determine, you know, by channel how we're performing versus some of the other folks. And March is a little bit of a typically a murky month. We feel that as Michael mentioned, we've got new products in some of the major home centers. We feel those products are good new products with good new branding. The independent dealer channel is a shrinking channel. We certainly feel we're holding our own there. And as Michael mentioned at the beginning, we've got to do better in our U.S. company-owned stores. And in Canada, we think we're at parity at minimum. But a little too early in the paint season to call it one way or the other.
Okay. Then just to follow up on your channel strategy, you've talked about, you know, investing in branding. Is this designed more for your company-owned stores, and what kind of investment should we expect in your company-owned stores going forward? Are you looking to open a certain number every year to sort of get that mix up above 50% of your overall architectural sales volume in the U.S. and Canada?
Yeah, so when you think about the $15 million investment that we made, that was a first quarter investment. That's a non-recurring investment. We do have enhanced brand strategies that we're rolling out, but that's incorporated where we might be replacing dollar one with our category A with category B, so there's no real step change there. We do open up. We expect to open up. We typically say 25, 50 stores in the U.S. and Canada. We'll be opening up 200 stores in Mexico, 170 to 200 stores. We'll be opening up stores in Europe as well, so that would also be in that 20 to 25 range. And so we continue to evaluate opportunities to grow this business. But I'd say overall, you know, I'm pleased with the performance there.
Thank you.
The next question comes from P.J. Juvekar of Citi. Please go ahead.
Yes, Michael, I want to go back to the refinish business. You know, what kind of growth are you seeing there, and can you break it down between price and volume? And then are MSOs getting bigger and bigger volume discounts?
No, let's start with the easy one. The MSOs has been relatively constant. They'd like to have bigger, but every customer we have wants a bigger discount, but it's been relatively flat. You know, when we think about our refinish business, it's not just the U.S. It's, you know, when we look at China, that is especially a good market for us. So they're shifting from solvents to water. There's a big tax in China on solvent-based products, so that's a positive for us. You know, historically, we do have positive price in our refinish business. You would expect that this year we'd have positive price as well. Interesting enough, volume in the U.S. is actually up. That has, you know, miles driven is up 2%. Not only do you have miles driven up, but you have a distracted driving up immensely. I see it about every day on my way home. So that's a positive. The other thing is, you know, when you look at what's happening with technology, our water-based product is outperforming in every region of the world. So, you know, even in Argentina right now, our business is growing in Argentina. You know, one of our competitors vacated Brazil. We picked up, you know, a huge chunk of that business. You know, one of our other competitors vacated Europe. We picked up the vast majority of that business. So, you know, we continue to perform in that regard. So, you know, when I think about, you know, one of the shining stars in PPG, you know, refinish is at the top of the list.
PJ, just to add to what Michael said, this is Frank, and we talked about this a little bit in the past. You know, with our strong position over in Asia, particularly in China, and the move from premium to the midline offerings, we have an opportunity to really grow that business over the long term, because as production over 20 million units goes, you know, mostly still to that market, that car park continues to grow, whereas in the developed regions where we're also have solid positions, you know, the car park is relatively steady, so you are depending upon miles driven, distracted driving, things like that. But China has the additional benefit of adding a lot of units to the car park, and so those growth rates over the long term bode well for the business overall.
Great, thank you. And secondly, did the introduction of HGTV at Lowe's have any impact on your sales at Lowe's? Thank you.
Well, I think the way to think about that, PJ, is which price points do we compete in? And so I think the way we look at it is our total sales to our retail partner were up year over year, 15 versus 14. And I'm not unhappy with the first quarter performance. And our relationship is very strong. And so I would tell you that is, you know, obviously a retail decision on how they split their brands and how they position them. But overall, we're happy with that relationship with Lowe's.
Great. Thank you.
The next question comes from John Roberts of UBS. Please go ahead.
Afternoon.
Hello, John.
With a coming consolidation in the number of suppliers into the DIY retail channel, do you think we should expect some rebalancing among customers, some churn, you know, to see share go up and down more than we have in the past, for example? And if there is a divestment, let's say, out of the Sherwin-William Valspar business, do you think we might end up with a new competitor in the space here that you might have to worry about?
Well, John, we don't speak for our customers, as Michael said earlier. You know, their sourcing decisions are typically theirs. I think we've got, as exhibited by the new products we're placing into the channel that you're talking about this year, you know, we always have good relationships with those customers, but we're not, you know, at liberty to make sourcing decisions for them. With respect to the acquisition of Sherwin-Valspar, you know, we're not... you know, we're not sure what the outcome of that will be, so that's not within our jurisdiction or our decision tree, so we'll leave that to the parties to be.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from James Sheehan of SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Can you talk about your expectations for TiO2 prices? Looks like they may be going up a little bit here in the short term. What's your outlook for the rest of the year on TiO2?
Well, James, TiO2, we've always said, is a supply-demand-driven environment. When I think about what's going on in the overall global supply-demand environment, you have additional capacity in China. You're soon to have additional capacity in Mexico. So from that regard, that's, you know, obviously a more supply. Demand, you know, if you look at Europe, European TiO2 consumption is down about 15% from its peak. So net-net, even though Europe volumes are recovering a little bit, they're still substantially down from where they were. Then, of course, you had the material weakness in Brazil, the material weakness in most of Latin America, Russia. And so, you know, from a supply-demand standpoint, I think, you know, we still see it as a balanced market. And I know they're out there running around with price increases announced. But if you remember, they've had price increase announcements for several quarters out of the past 2 or 3 years. And that, just because they announced, doesn't mean that we're paying. So overall, you know, our goal, as you know, we've taken out of PPG, 10% of our TiO2 consumption is down because of substitution strategy, replacement of alternative products, and also with the bringing in Hennin Billions. So I know there's a lot of noise out there, but, you know, when we talk to our suppliers, we're trying to get them focused on supply and demand. And that's where we're, you know, going to stay on that topic. I know they're looking at, they're not making any money, but they didn't write us a check the last time when they were at the top of the cycle.
Great. And can you also comment on demand trends you're seeing in various end markets in China?
Sure. So obviously automotive was up. Everybody sees those numbers, so good performance there. Industrial is a mixed bag, depends upon which segment. So anything to do with commodities is down, heavy-duty equipment down. Packaging, we're a little disappointed. The packaging output, it's relatively flat. You know, with the consumer-driven economy, we would have thought that would have been up a little bit more. But we are gaining share there with our BPA non-intent products, so could be doing better. If you look at refinish with Frank explained earlier, the car park is growing. You know, when they made the nice move to the premium market, we gained. We're introducing some mid-tier products, so that should be a net positive. It hasn't happened yet, but, you know, there is a COMAC, which expects to build an airplane at some point in time. They rolled it out of the hangar, but they rolled it back in the hangar, so everybody saw it. They didn't fly. So I don't know when that will start, but obviously we have a lot of content on that plane. So if it does get into production, we will be a net beneficiary of that. On the protective side, we are doing very well in protective in China. Marine, not bad, but, you know, you really have to balance that with the fact that the Korean marine is just falling off a cliff. In fact, two of the three largest Korean shipbuilders did not even get a major order in Q1. So you have to balance what you see in China with the fact that Korea, which is where the big market is off. So I guess that would be my kind of around the segment approach there.
I just want to reemphasize, James, that, you know, Michael talked earlier about India. We are seeing very good growth in India across all the markets in which we participate in. It's a smaller market for us, but an important market. But it is a very good growth trend right now.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Arun Viswanathan of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. I was just maybe digging on the volume side a little bit more. You know, the 1% volume growth that you posted across the portfolio, I know you guys weren't satisfied by that, and maybe can you help us understand what kind of visibility you have, maybe, you know, on a couple of the larger businesses, OEM, refinish, aero, and architectural, why that would accelerate as we go through the year, and are there specific projects or something else specific to you guys? Thanks.
Sure. I'll take a shot at that, Arun. If you look at our different businesses, we have the best visibility in both marine new build and aerospace, where we have a very long order cycle. We have fairly concrete order patterns by our customers. In the middle, you would have some industrial customers, automotive customers, where we're seeing with confidence, we'll call it a month's worth of orders, with fairly good confidence. And then on the other side of the equation would be architectural, including company-owned stores and independent dealers, where people are walking in on a daily basis, and the order pattern certainly has a cadence to it, but it's not as predictable. So there we have, let's call it, a few days' worth of visibility. If you aggregate all that, 50-60% of our business, we can see out probably several weeks, if not a month or longer. And so that's what gives us our ability to forecast for you what we think.
Okay, thanks. And then also as a follow-up, just curious, are we still kind of expecting that overall volume growth could approach mid-single digits for the year? And I guess where would you see the greatest amount of volume growth?
Well, we definitely expect improvement as we go throughout the year. Again, I think in Q1 of this year, we had some very difficult comps in some large businesses. Michael mentioned the, almost 10% comp we had in automotive in Q1 year over year. That starts to wane as we go throughout the year. And again, we had, as Michael mentioned earlier, we had some easier weather comps in some of our businesses in the U.S. As we come up on Q2 and Q3. So, our expectation certainly is to move the needle more positively than we did in Q1.
Okay, and then lastly, if I may, the FX side, I know that you had said that there was still a negative impact in Q1. Would that also wane as we go through the year, and do you expect ultimately to potentially even get a benefit if we stay where we are on the euro?
Yeah, Rowan, it should, if we stay at current rates across the board, it will definitely wane as we go through the year. So, Q2 impact will still be a headwind, but a bit less than Q1 if things stay where they are, and will continue to dwindle down as you go through the year. Positive, negative at some point in time, well, it depends on the mix, because whereas last few quarters, the biggest headwind was the euro, with a little bit stronger euro than anticipated, but a little bit weaker peso, for instance, because of some of the oil-based factors there, as well as some weakness in Latin America. Some of that mix does change. So could one of the currencies turn positive at some point in time? Sure. But overall, if you look at the whole basket, yes, the 140 on the top line, the 15 you saw on the bottom line in the first quarter, that'll be a little bit less. And the numbers that Michael gave for the year, that 200 to 260 on the top line and the 30 to 40 the bottom line, dictate that at current rates, things will automatically come down. We'll see how that plays out if rates hold us throughout the year.
And I'll remind everybody, the guidance we gave in January was close to $600 million top line and 70-80 bottom line.
Right.
So that's a significant improvement versus 3 months ago.
Right.
Right. Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from Mike Harrison of Seaport Global Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for sneaking me in.
How you doing?
Doing well. Was wondering if you could give us an update on exactly where you are with some of the display resets you're doing at Lowe's. How much of that is complete, and do you have any metrics that you can share with us in terms of the customer response, either Lowe's or what you're seeing from the actual DIY customers that are going through?
Well, I won't talk about specifically Lowe's. I'll talk about the industry in general. When you look at the home centers, the typical way they do the resets is they start in the southern and western states and then work their way north. So if you think about that, we're probably less than one-third of the way through it. Typically, they're all done by the end of May. So that's kind of the cadence that we'd be working on. Again, we don't want to talk for our customers, but the early indications that we saw, we were very pleased with the early turnover in the stores. But again, it's a small data set in Q1 because if you think about it, most of that started getting set mid-March. So you only had 2 weeks in Q1, and then you'll have, probably half of a quarter, half to two-thirds of a quarter in the second quarter.
And the $15 million worth of expense was partially related to that. That spending is complete at this point, correct?
That is complete, and it was a one-time spend.
Okay. And then the last question I had is just on the auto refinish business in Latin America. I know that you had been seeing some weakness there. Has that started to show any signs of improving or still pretty weak?
Well, I think you have to look at it by country, right? So Mexico still doing well in Mexico. Colombia, I would say more flatline. Argentina is getting better. So that was the one positive. And even though Brazil is going down, we're actually going up because one of our competitors pulled out of Brazil. So that's been a positive from a refinish side.
Yeah, it's still significantly negative overall in Latin America for Q1.
All right, thanks very much.
The next question comes from Niles Wallen of CLFA. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. Michael, with respect to the long-term outlook in the BPA non-intent, your four-year, five-year cycle, curious to know how much in sort of beverage can penetration is baked into that and where you see the bottlers and the can producers currently in terms of their BPA usage within the can.
I would say this is inning bottom of the first, top of the second inning. So there's a lot of work to be done in this regard. You tend to have one customer on the beverage side as a leader, and then most of the other guys tend to be followers. So we're out in front with the leader in that area. And you have a couple of the food guys that are more aggressive, so they've moved at a faster rate than the beverage guys have. And then I would say that the beer side, it's even on a slower ramp. So there's been a lot of pack tests done. There's been a lot of taste tests done. There's been a lot of work in that area. But as far as actual production, it is way, way early in the game for those guys.
And Neil, just to piggyback on what Michael was saying before, too, keep in mind that in businesses where we've typically outperformed in the recent past, we were already starting with a solid market share position, and those businesses were already kind of at a mature level. This has two advantages, this sector. Not only at its infancy in terms of adoption, but we're also starting at a point in time where, as Michael said, very low share inside the can. So everything's incremental share for us, early points of adoption. That's what gives us the confidence that this is a multi-year trend and has a lot of legs to it for some time to come.
Got it. That's very helpful. Thanks. And just as a follow-up, the independent network in North American architectural obviously has been down. Do you have a sense what, first of all, over the last couple of years, the average rate of decline has been? And do you think it's accelerating, decelerating, and where does it sort of bottom out, or does it just completely disappear?
Well, first, Bill, let me say that this channel has been in a contraction mode for quite some time. I'd say if you look over a longer period of time, call it 5 or 7 years, the contraction's been more modest than the industry has expected. I definitely say the last couple of years that's accelerated somewhat, but it's lumpy. So there's not a linear path here. Right now I think we're probably contracting somewhere between, let's call it 1-2% per year the last couple of years to the market.
I mean, is where do you expect it actually to bottom out? Is it percent of the total market?
It's a long-term play. I mean, obviously, as our retail partners get bigger, as the company-owned store networks get bigger, you know, it's more challenged as these people that own these stores, you know, as their children do not want to be in the hardware business or don't want to be in the paint store business, they tend to sell. So over time, this is just a demographic play that will continue to play out. But, you know, you're talking about 30, 40, 50 years. You know, this isn't something that's going to be gone in, you know, 3 weeks or 3 years.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Laurence Alexander of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Two related questions. First, as you look at your comments around the operating leverage to the recovery in Europe and also opportunities to improve your supply chain and productivity, is there any structural reason why your conversion of sales to free cash flow shouldn't improve on a 2 to 3 year kind of basis?
I think it's a very good point, Lawrence. You know, not only will we get the operating leverage, but we're also have a multi-year effort going on an improvement in working capital, and that also will help us improve the conversion, cash flow conversion. So we still have the opportunity to improve inventory levels. We're looking at working on our complexity, which will improve days of inventory. Still have some room to improve past due receivables, so that will help conversion. The other factor is that we have said in the recent past that our capital spending is more, you know, at a peak level now and will decline over the next 5 years. That will also improve our cash conversion as a percent of net income and as a percent of depreciation. So all those factors considered actually bode well for cash conversion percentage over the next 3 to 5 years.
And Lawrence, I'll remind folks, we're still down volume-wise in Europe. Let's call it mid-teens.
Right.
So there's still a lot of recovery left. You know, not saying we'll get back all that as a region, but there's still a lot of recovery left in the region.
And then when you look at industrial coatings, the value proposition to the customer, the mix that you have in your between the, what do you call it, the protecting surfaces as opposed to decorating them or beautifying them, do you have the right balance or is that balance going to shift over time? And does that shift, if there is one, have any implication for either margins or sales growth?
I think Lawrence, we do both. I think the coatings industry, not only PPG, but we protect and beautify. So it's a dual purpose that the coating provides. I don't think there's a mixed differential. You know, on an automobile, it protects the surface and beautifies the vehicle itself. So most of our coatings do both.
Thank you.
And the last question today, due to time constraints, will come from Ivan Marcuse of KeyBank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple quick questions. The first one was onto Lawrence's question. What is your goal for working capital as a percent of sales? It continues to improve. What do you think you could get this down to?
Yeah, it's going to vary by business. The businesses, some of which are largely transactional and require very, very quick response to customers, are actually going to carry something in, you know, more in the high single digits. If you run the numbers based on our inventories right now, you can say we're around, you know, 80 days of inventory if you run it off the financial statements. We think that there's a good 5 to 10 days of inventory opportunity there. We picked up 5 days last year. There's still several more days to get to our benchmark. You know, we're looking at 100 basis points a year generally to improve working capital. Combination of payables, where we've made a lot of progress recently, inventories, past due receivables. So, and keep in mind that every day of inventory and payables is worth $25 million. Every day of receivables is worth $43 million. There's a lot of leverage on cash flow by improving it just a little bit.
Great. And then my last question is, you mentioned that March is your strongest month with 2 to 3% type of volume growth. Did Easter have any sort of impact on March? I know that, you know, from April to March, or is that sort of a negligible type of event for your business?
For most of our businesses, Ivan, you know, our B2B businesses specifically, it has a negligible or no impact. Most of our B2B businesses run 24/7. Easter did move into Q1 this year. It was in Q2 last year. It might have had a small crimp impact on some of our B2C businesses. Again, not what I would call noticeable in the numbers.
Great. Thank you.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Scott Minder for any closing remarks.
Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for their time and interest in PPG. If you have any further questions, please contact Investor Relations. This concludes our first quarter earnings call. Thanks.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.